This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. After the Wesley United Methodist Church closed their tent ministry a few weeks ago, the homeless community in La Crosse are left with one less place to seek shelter. Homelessness continues to be an issue for the city, but community resources, nonprofits, and faith-based organizations are now working together to find new ways to help the homeless. Joining us today to talk about the issue are Roberto Partero, Executive Director of Catholic Charities, and Kelly Waddell, Director of Social Services for the Salvation Army of La Crosse. You know, how has the issue of homelessness changed in La Crosse? Has it always been kind of a part of the community, or, you know, have certain factors recently kind of complicated things?
Well, Roberto? I think the problem of homelessness has been here all along. It's just that it's now becoming part of the community, and it's more noticeable. But it's something that has been happening all the time. The people that we serve, the homeless people that we serve, our guests at our shelters, are local individuals. They're people that come from the community. They are within the county. They live in the county. They've been here most of their lives. So it's a problem that is, I think, becoming more noticeable because we care.
Kelly, who are the average people who are homeless? You know, what kind of factors, or is there an average person?
I think it varies. I think we really try to look at people's individuals. I think if you look at demographics, La Crosse has definitely seen an increase in families who are seeking emergency shelter services, as well as community-based services. So that's been something that the community has had to adjust to. I think, as Roberto said, I think that's definitely kind of putting more of a face on homelessness. It seems to be when people are recognizing children as being homeless, that seems to kind of push the issue to the forefront a little more. Our shelter is full almost every night of families, so we are consistently turning families away from shelter and offering alternative resources. So again, that's definitely a need in this community. It's something that I think we all struggle with, how to help those people, and try not to duplicate services, make sure that we're all helping them the best that we can. But I think families have been a huge increase in this community, and I think we're all kind of scrambling about how to serve them and make sure those needs are met.
We serve mostly adults, men and women adults, so we don't duplicate the services. Mm-hmm. And again, we've seen an increase in the numbers. We've seen an increase in the number of people we serve every single day. And in our day centers as well, in our Franciscan Hospitality House, as well as in the downtown offices that we are located in. We're closed for the summer, but in our day center is open year round. We see more people coming in. We see more adults and more women, especially women. We see more of them. So it's a problem that is here, and we need to face it.
Kelly, what factors do you think are driving more families, to seek shelter at emergency shelters?
I think just across the board, if you look at singles and families, the cost of housing continues to grow up. If you look at any data or any study, housing costs are directly related to the number of homeless people you have in your community. The recent study came out for the average wage someone would need to afford a two-bedroom apartment in different states. And for La Crosse, for Wisconsin, it was just over $15 an hour. And I can tell you that many of the people that both of our agencies serve are not making anywhere near that. And so you're having a lot of people have to choose between maybe paying their rent or putting themselves in an unsafe situation. It definitely has created a bottleneck situation in our community. We have people who are working. Just over 70% of the people in our shelter have full-time jobs. So it's certainly not for lack of people working and having an income. It's just that they have nowhere to go. There's definitely a housing issue here in La Crosse. And I think a lot of community leaders are coming together trying to figure out kind of how to solve that issue.
I agree. I mean, it's the same thing. About 70% of the people we serve have a job, but it's a problem of low-income housing. There's a tremendous shortage of low-income housing, and our guests just can't find it. There's not enough housing, and there's not enough landlords that are willing to provide housing for people that have had some history problems or some problems with paying rent in the past or lost their jobs or even addictions. Or any kind of other problem that many of our guests have. So it is a situation that we need to assist them with.
And you both represent, you know, two different organizations that are providing resources in La Crosse. So, you know, do you want to just, Roberto, if you want to start, just tell us a little bit about the Franciscan Hospitality House and other, you know, resources that Catholic Charities provides?
I mean, we work with, we have the St. Lawrence program, for example, which is, we try to help families and assist families with their utility bills, with their rent, with their financial situation. It's a program that we establish to assist families so that we can prevent them getting into homeless situation. And we provide that financial education and provide them with the financial assistance to prevent them being homeless. And we serve over hundreds of families at the moment in that kind of a situation. At the same time, we do that at the same place where in our downtown office, at the same location where we have our warming center facilities. So, and we provide immigration services as well. We provide adoption services. We provide a number of other services to work with the person in its entirety. So it's not just about providing a shelter or providing a place for them to stay at night or even during the day. It's to work with that individual and help them become more of themselves, become a full person, somebody that they can, that can be a productive member of society, but more importantly, they can feel themselves fulfilled and see the dignity that they have in themselves. So those services are provided at the Franciscan Hospitality House as well. We provide food care. We have a Judge LeGrand, retired Judge LeGrand, is providing legal services, and a number of volunteers that are providing psychological services as well, to assist the individual to become a person, to understand the dignity of the person, to be part of that of society, to belong to that to our community, and make them feel part of our community. That's our goal.
The Franciscan Hospitality House just recently celebrated its first year.
Correct.
I mean, how has that program been going? I mean, what has been the, the response? Have you had a lot of people seeking resources there?
It's been tremendous. I mean, we serve over 400 people last year at the Franciscan Hospitality House. We serve every day. We have an average of about 28 people daily coming into the house. We are open from 4:30 to from 12:30 to 4:30. And during that period of time, we have counselors, we have nurses that come in and do food care, we have hairdressers that come in and they can do the laundry, they can take a shower, they can talk. I mean, it's a place where they meet and they have a community. It's their community. It's their group of people, their group of friends. So it's a place that they can meet and chat and have a safe place to be out of the elements, in the wintertime, out of the cold, in the summertime, out of the heat. So it's their house. It's doing really well, and we are really excited to continue with that. Now that the Methodist Church has closed their tent, more of the homeless are coming to our facility again to spend time with us and with themselves. So it's a place to meet.
And Kelly, tell me a little bit about the shelter that the Salvation Army provides.
Sure. We offer a lot of different social service programs. Basically, you can kind of look at our shelter as its own standalone program. We are an 80-bed shelter. We house single women, single men, and families, so we're a large mixed population shelter. We are generally full every night for families. Singles, we definitely have some flexibility in terms of space. We work very closely with Catholic Charities, with the Warming Center, with the Hospitality House. We kind of share services and referrals back and forth to make sure that people's needs are being met, which has been a great partnership for both of our agencies, I think. In terms of community-based programs, we offer several different financial assistance programs, whether it's utility assistance, transportation assistance, rental assistance. We have a few outreach workers who are going out to the community, and just to echo Roberto, I think we're all trying to be really proactive and keep people out of that homeless event, really keep them in the community, in their housing, and doing whatever we can to do that. So again, I think that's another staple of one of our programs. We also offer some in-house psychiatric services, which has been a great service because with some of the backlog at both of the hospital's behavioral health units, it's been nice to know that people have another option to maybe meet with a psychiatrist. Alcohol, drug use issues are huge in this population, as well as mental health. Probably just about a third of people at all times who are experiencing homelessness have some pretty significant mental health issues. And so I think we're doing what we can, you know, whether it's counselors at Hospitality House, House or Psychiatrist Salvation Army to make sure those needs are being met.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about homelessness in La Crosse and what community organizations are doing to address the issue. We're here with Roberto Parturo, Executive Director of Catholic Charities, and Kelly Waddell, Director of Social Services for the Salvation Army of La Crosse. And as Roberto's mentioned, you know, the tent ministry at the Wesley United Methodist Church has closed this earlier this summer. Kelly, have you guys seen an increase of people coming to the Salvation Army now that, you know, the unsheltered community has one less option?
Yeah, I think we've seen an increase in the number of intakes. We actually had talked to Wesley before they closed, so they knew it was going to be closing. And as a community, several of our social service organizations met. Before it closed, we kind of went through who was staying at that site to make sure that we tried to reach out and connect with those people to make sure that they at least knew of the available options and resources for them after it closed. And so I think we did a really good job of reaching out to those people. I think, again, we were really trying to be proactive. And I think we have seen some increase in some of the intakes. But again, I think that some people, the shelter is not for everybody, and we don't expect it to be. And I think that's why both of our programs have outreach programs, that we really try to go out into some of these homeless communities and make sure people at least are aware of some other options for them.
And, you know, as you both have mentioned, you know, drug and alcohol use is sometimes an issue for you know, people who are homeless. And I know that sometimes that also means that they aren't eligible to stay in a shelter if they have been using drugs or alcohol. Roberto, how do you help those people who, you know, maybe aren't eligible to stay at the shelter that night? Where do you send them?
Well, in our case, we do allow people with alcohol or drug addiction problems to stay. As long as they are behaving properly, they can stay in our place. We don't have that restriction. So we're helping them. But sometimes this person's, for whatever reason, they are in a situation where we have to send them to the hospital because they're in such a bad and poor situation. We have to make that call. And we call the hospitals and we take them to them. So we're helping as much as we can to all individuals. Everybody has an addiction problem. I mean, addiction, sometimes we consider addictions only an issue of alcohol and drugs. Sometimes pride can be an addiction. Sometimes other things are, you know, we all have some sort of problem, something that we need to work on. So we try not to pass judgment on that, and we try to help everybody on the situation they are. And as Kelly was saying, we're so glad that we can collaborate because we work together so well. We have recently a case where Kelly was tremendously helpful. Salvation Army was very helpful in providing a shelter for an individual who was recently had an operation, didn't have a place to go. He is undocumented, and we couldn't find a place for him to be and nobody taking care of. And Salvation Army took care of him because they literally took him by the hand and showed him the place and showed them the way. So collaboration is the name of the game, and it's what we're trying to do with all our agencies.
And, you know, you're talking about collaboration between, you know, community resources, but, you know, Kelly, how are you guys collaborating with, you know, either the city or the county to also help address the issue of homelessness?
I think we're really fortunate right now. Mayor Cabot is a huge advocate of homeless services and really focusing on what we can do to end homelessness in our community. So I think we're very fortunate right now with the leadership we have in La Crosse. There, I would say 99.9% of the time, there is generally a city or a county representative in almost every committee meeting that I know Roberto and I both sit on a lot. And I know that there is generally a representative there. So I think this is inclusive of the county. I feel like that they're on board. I think that they're doing what they can to help make changes. I don't think the collaboration stops at Catholic Charities and Salvation Army. So I think there's lots of other organizations in the community that are usually at the table. Cooley Cap is a huge, huge proponent of housing in our community. And again, I think the county is always there and always asking, you know, what can we do to help? They're obviously a huge funding source for our organization. And again, just having that representation and really some of those policy makers and policy changers at the table is incredibly beneficial.
And we work with the police, and we work with the city, as Kelly said, with the mayor, and we work with every agency. And also there are a lot of individuals, private individuals, private corporations that are not only providing financial resources, but are also looking at solving the issue long-term. And we are trying to find and create a group where we can look forward in solving the homeless situation and provide low-income housing. We're looking at trying to work with developers and trying to work with real estate companies that are looking at providing some sort of solution long-term. But that's a big goal. That's something that it's going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of thinking and a lot of dedication. But the resources have to come from everybody. They have to come from the government, from corporations, from individuals, from nonprofits. I mean, it's a job for all of us.
And you mentioned, thinking long-term and thinking long-term solutions for the housing issue in La Crosse. And I know that Gunderson Healthcare System brought in a national consultant, Aaron Healy, to start looking at ways that the community can work together on some of these issues. Roberto, were you, I believe Catholic of Charities was involved in some of those conversations, right?
Yes, we were and we are. I mean, we have a group, a leadership group that we are part of it. And with Salvation Army and Erin Healy, we're going to meet with her when she comes in at the end of July. Actually, yesterday we had a first meeting. So it is something that we're involved and we are looking forward to working. She has tremendous experience nationwide. I think her experience can definitely find fertile ground in La Crosse. I mean, La Crosse is a unique community that is about the perfect size city to be able to address all these problems in a very professional and effective way. And we have hospitals, we have universities, we have entrepreneurs, we have companies, we have businesses, and everybody wants to solve this issue. And it's a community like I have seen no other to come together and solve the problems.
What do you think is motivating everybody to want to solve this issue? You know, what are those factors?
People care. You cannot pass a law to force anybody to do anything. This is something that you either care or you don't. This is something that touches your heart or you don't. When you meet our guests, when you talk to them, when you see the people on the street, when you look at them in the eyes and you hear their stories, it breaks your heart. I mean, I recently met one of our guests, and I was talking to him at the Franciscan Hospitality House, and he approached me and said, "Roberto, I don't know what I'm going to do. Next week," and this is about a month ago before we closed the warming center in at the end of April, I said, "I can't be homeless again. I'm 58 years old," and the guy was 6'5". You know, I'm only 5'7". So having him bending down and crying on my shoulder was not an easy task for him. But, you know, he was just breaking down, and it broke my heart to see somebody like that go through that. I can't imagine somebody reaching almost 60 and being homeless, and that's the population we serve. We serve people from age 18 to some of them are 75, 78 years old. So I think because we serve so many people, We work with so many volunteers. We work with over 500 volunteers in La Crosse in different areas. They know the people. They get to see who they are. They see the dignity and the individual. They see the person, not a number, not a homeless. They see an individual. That, I think, is reaching out to the community, and the community is embracing that challenge. So human beings can love, and that the ability to love, it's what makes the difference.
And Kelly, I mean, do you feel like these long-term solutions of finding, long-term housing for people so that they're not continuously, you know, seeking shelter at an emergency shelter or other temporary placement, you know, do you think those are possible for La Crosse, that's achievable?
I think it's achievable. I think that we have a great leadership team in place. I think having Aaron Healy on board for our community is an incredible opportunity and privilege. I think, like Roberto said, I think all the pieces are there. It's just a matter of getting the ball rolling, and it's going to take everybody. It's going to take citizens. It's going to take companies. It's going to take funders. It's going to take people who can really implement policies and programming changes. But I think that we have a really good program going right now, and I think, again, we just need to get the ball rolling, and I think with Aaron's support and kind of drive and guidance, I think that we're going to be successful. I think it's lacrosse is going to see amazing changes over the next year, which I think we're all really excited about.
Tell us a little bit about who else is a part of this leadership team.
I think it's good representation of a lot of different community parts. We have the city and county of La Crosse is represented. We have the school district. We have private individuals. We have business owners. We have foundations. We have social service organizations, you know, Catholic Charities and New Horizons and Coolie Cap and Salvation Army. So I think it's a really good mix of a lot of different key players in the community. I think that we have all showed in the past that we work well together. And again, I want to echo that I think right now is a really great opportunity with Mayor Cabot. I think that we have a chance to really make some positive changes and differences. And I think Aaron's support is going to really help us do that.
You know, you both have mentioned mental health and how, you know, a lot of times those services are really needed for people facing homelessness. You know, Roberto, is mental health something that is a factor leading to homelessness or something that is just a product of it?
I think both. Mental health is a factor that leads many of our guests. Kelly was mentioning about 30%, and that's a national statistic. Mm-hmm. About 30% of our guests suffer from some form of mental health. About 15% of our guests are veterans that are suffering from some form of mental health. And it's a contributing factor. Now, if you have that issue of mental health and all of a sudden you're working and you lose your job and you become homeless, that becomes even worse. And then your problems duplicate and becomes much larger. So mental health is definitely an issue, but the major factor in homelessness is an economic problem. But I also think it's a human problem. It's not just purely economics. Economics is a driving force. Yes, you lose your job, but when you lose sight of the community that you live in, when you lose your friends, when you lose your contacts, when you lose your family, when you find yourself alone and you become isolated, when you feel that nobody cares, when you feel that nobody wants you, when you feel that you don't belong and people start looking at you with different eyes, that's when you get into a hole that you cannot get out of it. And that's what happens with long-term homelessness. So what Aaron was, Healy was mentioning was we will try to work with individuals within 30 days, if they become homeless, they don't spend more than 30 days in a homeless situation. We have to find a house for them before that. Otherwise, it becomes a very big issue personally. And mental health, the problems of mental health then becomes very difficult to solve.
Kelly, earlier you mentioned that, you know, housing, the cost of housing is really a factor in this and in what, you know, leads to people not having shelter. Do you think that because there are a lot of students and therefore a lot of rental housing in La Crosse area, you know, does that play a factor in the rental market?
It's a huge factor. The students are great to have in our community. They're a they play a vital role in this community. That we get amazing volunteers from them. But they take up all the housing slots. And if you look at where the universities are centered, they're centered really towards downtown La Crosse. If you look at where the bus routes are and the bus systems are highly active, it's really throughout the city of La Crosse. Once you kind of get out of the city limits, the buses don't run as frequently. Most of our people do not have their own private transportation, so they utilize the bus system. So if you look at the housing market, the people that we serve are competing for the same housing the students are looking for. So we really push for our people to really look hard for housing in the summer because we know that the housing, you know, availability is much more. It creates kind of this competition, you know, that usually the homeless people don't always win those battles. You know, as Roberto said, many of our people have pretty significant mental health issues, drug and alcohol issues. They may or may not have an eviction on their record. Lots of times when you're experiencing a homeless event, you get lots of little petty tickets add up. And so lots of landlords just aren't willing to look beyond those things to give them a chance. So a lot of times students are winning out in these apartments. So it creates an issue. We know it's an issue. We try to work around it. We have some great relationships with some landlords in the community that are really willing to give some people a fair shot, which has been an amazing resource for us. But yeah, the students are great, but they definitely create a housing issue for our homeless population. So,
and Roberto, you know, as the community looks towards these changes, what's one thing that you are hoping that La Crosse can provide or adapt?
I think the first things we have to do is to find investors to do and provide low-income housing. We need to find the resources to find more low-income housing and make them available. That's the biggest bottleneck that we have at the moment, because the services that we provide, Catholic Charities, Salvation Army, Cooley Cap, they're there. Mm-hmm. But we always have that bottleneck. We do not have enough low-income housing available. And we're always finding that to be very difficult. And what are you going to do with somebody that is staying and sleeping on a bench or sleeping in a parking garage or sleeping in a park somewhere in the cold? What can you expect? I mean, that person is just desperate. And any assistant that we can provide, we first have to provide them housing. Find a safe place for them to be that night. That's the first step. And the principle of housing first is a very good principle. We have to find housing. And then we can provide the different services. We wish to provide, you know, the services, psychiatric help, psychological help, financial help, job training help. All those services come afterwards, and counseling.
Roberto Partero, Executive Director of Catholic Charities, is here with us today to talk about what community organizations are doing to help the homeless in La Crosse. Also joining us in studio is Kelly Waddell, Director of Social Services for the Salvation Army of La Crosse. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about homelessness with a national consultant who's helping La Crosse develop a plan for more permanent solutions. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the issue of homelessness in La Crosse. After the Wesley United Methodist Church closed their tent ministry a few weeks ago, La Crosse's homeless now have one less place to seek shelter. But community stakeholders are coming together to find more permanent housing solutions. Joining us to talk about how La Crosse can help the unsheltered is Aaron Healy, a national expert on preventing and ending homelessness. You came to La Crosse in June to consult with several different community stakeholders about homelessness in La Crosse. You know, what was your assessment?
I'm sponsored by Gunderson Health Systems, who brought me out to, because, you know, they do a lot of work in the community. And, yeah, I spent a week basically meeting, seemed like, almost every partner in La Crosse and the city, the county board, the city council, the mayor, and then a bunch of the private nonprofits. My assessment is that La Crosse is in a perfect position. It's a perfect moment to kind of take work to the next level. You have a lot of, I think, very competent, caring providers. You've had people at the helm of these different systems for a while who know the population really, really well. And I think all of them, what was really striking to me is that every single partner I talked to, I'm thinking without exception, were ready to, like, take it to the next innovation inflection, you know, to sort of the idea of, like, ending homelessness and doing the long-term solution, which is housing. they were ready to tackle that. And I think I expected maybe to meet more resistance with, it's often very difficult for a community to shift the way they do their work. You know, if people have been doing a certain thing for 20 years in a certain way, it's not easy to imagine changing that. But I think most folks knew that emergency shelter, crisis response, reactive responses were not going to solve the problem. As much as they were needed maybe in the near term, you had to be working on something that was more focused on permanent housing solutions if you really want to end homelessness. So I was really struck by the openness of the community to try something new, and the compassion, a deep level of compassion in the community for solving this problem and putting resources toward it.
Right, and you mentioned, you know, those short-term resources for the unsheltered community. I mean, from your perspective, just kind of outsider looking in, are there enough resources for, you know, kind of the short-term homelessness situation, I guess?
I think there are. I mean, in the communities that we worked with in the campaign, and we worked really intensively with about 67 of the 186, like on the ground, doing really intensive, what we called boot camps with them, they shifted systems and, you know, doubled their housing placement rate, you know, found permanent housing that they didn't think they had, and did all this incredible improvement work without brand new resources. They were just using their existing resources differently. And I think the same conditions exist in La Crosse, because one of the examples I used, you know, I won't claim to be the expert on all the data in La Crosse yet, because mine was just an initial assessment, but even the early data that I saw, one thing really jumped out at me. By even a very conservative estimate, you're spending, La Crosse is spending $14,000 annually on one shelter bed, right? So that could pay for 2 one-bedroom apartments annually, you know? Like, so it's just like using your resources differently. I would argue that investment in a short-term emergency shelter bed where someone, they can't even stay during the day, if you're drinking, you can't use that, that's not a great investment. You could pay for someone to have their own apartment for a year. That's a better investment in giving them services. So I think that there are ample resources in La Crosse to start shifting toward the longer-term solution while you also have an immediate answer to someone who needs shelter. So I think one of the challenges of shifting a system is that if you're shifting from a portfolio of emergency units toward permanent housing, for a while you're going to have to run two systems, right? Because you can't, I don't mean that literally run two systems, but as you're increasing your permanent housing portfolio, you can't completely shut the door on the emergency units because people need that. But so you kind of have to, you may need an infusion of resources to start that shift, and then you can start shifting the money from the emergency toward the permanent, or toward emergency less as a place where people get stuck for years and years, but as what sometimes they call bridge housing. That if you're going into a shelter, because, you know, none of us can get an apartment within 2 hours, but if you're going into a shelter, you're there for hopefully less than 30 days, and the whole point of that is that it's the first step toward more stable housing, and you're kind of like going through that housing as a bridge toward a more permanent solution. So I think there's ample resources in terms of money, even the existing funds. There's philanthropy as well in La Crosse that are probably interested in helping to a certain degree that can meet the needs of the community that's there and also start this shift toward more permanent solutions.
And you talk about, you know, an investment. Do you feel like that investment should be coming from, you know, nonprofits, from faith-based organizations, from, you know, groups like that? Or is this something that, you know, the city and the county governments potentially need to really be looking at?
I think definitely the city and the county should be looking at it, because it's been proven over and over again that if you are fiscally responsible with a taxpayer dollar, you're investing in permanent solutions, not in crisis systems. Because over and over, there's dozens of studies that show that the crisis system, basically managing or maintaining someone's homelessness through crisis systems, which often include emergency shelter, hospital ERs, police have a lot of interaction with homeless people, so they spend a lot of their staff time, which is expensive, dealing with people who are homeless or sleeping in doorways. And so you have police, jails, courts, emergency shelters, detox centers, ERs, all these different systems where if you imagine a person who is homeless that has very high needs, maybe it's mental health or substance abuse, what is, you know, classically the most visible homeless? They're not the majority of the homeless, but a lot of times when people think about homeless people, they think of, oh, that guy in the park who I see every day, and he clearly has some other issues going on. So if you think of a very high-needs homeless individual, all the different systems that they touch during a day, those are extremely expensive systems that are usually paid for publicly. And so when you add up and do kind of a cost analysis of that, typically what you're paying for with your public tax dollars, you're paying four times more to maintain that person's homelessness than it would have been if you were investing in their rent, let's say, for an apartment with services. It's a lot cheaper to help people get into stable housing, and that's also when they start to make better choices about their life and get healthier and maybe drink less or start connecting with something that helps them stabilize their mental health, or, you know, It's sort of common sense. You know, if you and I were sleeping on a bench, we probably wouldn't be taking very good care of ourselves. But if we had housing, we would probably start to stabilize. So, yeah, if you are an elected official who wants to be stewarding the public dollar in a very responsible way, you're investing in permanent supportive housing. Definitely, it's a lot cheaper. So I think that is, as a policy, that's where the country has been going. But I do think there's also, in La Crosse, opportunity for faith-based communities, nonprofits, funders. If I would tell any funder as well the same thing. If you want a good return on your investment in terms of people's saving people's lives and investing in a good long-term solution, you'd be investing in pathways to permanent housing and the supportive services to help people maintain their housing.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about helping the homeless community in La Crosse. We're here with national consultant Aaron Healy, who recently visited the city to meet with a group of community stakeholders. You know, and homelessness is not a new issue by any means. And so, you know, why do you think communities haven't embraced this idea of providing more permanent, you know, housing, I guess, assistance?
Well, I think they have. I mean, it's the official policy of the federal government, you know, and that was under George Bush, George Bush II, George W. Bush. Then housing, that's called Housing First, which is kind of a big shift that happened, I would say, in the mid to late 90s, because the data started rolling out about what if we just put people into housing right away, rather than saying, hey, go get sober, or whatever it is, go get sober, go manage your mental health, come back, and then we'll talk about housing. That used to be the approach. And a provider in New York City, Pathways to Housing, I think is usually credited with starting this trend toward, flipping the equation and saying, wait a minute, what if we put these folks right into housing so they could get a good night's sleep, so they could start feeling better, and then immediately start working on those issues. Let's see if that works. And so that worked a lot better. And so that's called Housing First. And so Housing First really caught on because, especially when the data started rolling in about the cost effectiveness, you know, that I was just talking about, So that, under George Bush, HUD, Housing and Urban Development, really adopted that as this is the way to go. We need to be investing in housing first. So it's been, you know, a decade or so where, at least on a federal level, and most of the major, larger cities, no, it's like housing first. There's no question that that's the way to go. I think maybe there are some smaller communities where this idea has been maybe slower to take hold, but I didn't encounter in La Crosse a lot of resistance to that idea. I think people get it, that it's just common sense that people with high needs are going to get better if they have stable housing. And then and then you bring in the cost data, and people see that, like, oh, yeah, every time that person encounters a police officer, that's ringing up a bill publicly, because that's staff time that is very expensive. Every time that person goes to the ER because they have frostbite, that's a public cost. So when you present that, then people start to change their minds and realize, oh, that really is the fiscally responsible thing to do. And, of course, people get better. I give presentation at the city council and in La Crosse to the council members, and I wish I knew his name, but one of the council members, whose name I did not get, but he came up to me afterwards and he said, you know, I'm a very committed conservative, and I came here very skeptical, but you really opened my eyes, which is like the best possible thing you could say to me in terms of like a presentation. But, you know, I think that sort of cost-benefit analysis was very compelling of like, yeah, why, even if I think this person should have made different choices in their lives, do I resent them so much or judge them so much that I'm willing to pay four times the amount to keep them homeless? No, probably not. So I think sometimes communities resist that idea because the idea of paying, in this country, culturally, we're very resistant to the idea of paying someone's rent. You know, even, it's just like against our grain, you know, in a way that maybe in Denmark it isn't, you know. But when you present that in the context of, okay, you might pay someone's rent for a while they get back on their feet, but you're paying four times that to maintain them living in your park, that is kind of, when you present that whole context, like, oh, okay, that doesn't make sense either. So it's kind of like a hidden cost issue that you have to bring to light. And once people see that, I think they're not very resistant to the idea of helping people get housing, because it also helps this person get better and then, you know, become reemployed and, you know, contributing to society again. So I think it's largely an education issue of just bringing the facts to people. And when you do, they think differently about the idea of subsidizing someone's rent for a while.
And, you know, what factors generally contribute to people falling into homelessness in communities like La Crosse?
It's primarily economic. They simply can't pay their rent. And I think overwhelmingly, the largest sector of the homeless don't have any mental health issues, don't have any addiction issues. They simply don't have enough money to pay their rent. And they are often the less visible homeless. Often it's families. And maybe they got a bill that, you know, a medical bill, and they missed a payment on their rent, and they're evicted. And, you know, so often it's a spiral just of pure economics. Sometimes it's medical issues that impact them financially. There's a smaller slice of the homeless population, probably 10 to 20%, that have, you know, severe mental health issues or severe addiction issues. And I think in La Crosse, alcohol and addiction are a big contributor. Some of the data I saw shows that domestic violence, people fleeing domestic violence, are a big chunk of the people who fall into homelessness in La Crosse. So someone who's leaving their home because it's an abusive or dangerous situation, and then they end up, you know, usually with children, going to a shelter and trying to, you know, figure out how to get back on their feet financially. So I'd say overwhelmingly the biggest contributor in every city, and I don't think La Crosse is any different, is just economics. People don't have enough money to pay their rent. And then the next level would be some sort of maybe substance abuse or mental health issues that contribute to inability to maintain housing.
You know, I know that you gave some recommendations for, you know, how the city can kind of start moving towards, you know, more permanent housing solutions. What were some of your recommendations for La Crosse?
Well, I think one of the things we'll be doing, I'll probably be out there before the end of the summer, is to really start working on this issue differently and to shift from a sort of planning mode, which is, again, very common in most communities where you're doing some, like, 5-year planning or 10-year planning. And our work that I did with Community Solutions and our partner, an organization called the Rapid Results Institute, we work with communities to shift the way they work and to have a bias toward action over planning. And so one of the things I recommended is to do what we call a rapid cycle iteration that's very, very focused on a particular population. So I don't know exactly what La Crosse is going to decide to where they're going to set their marks, but this is an example of that I shared when I was out there. Like, if La Crosse could get a working group together to redesign, to look at the system as it works now, to develop some redesign ideas that they think would work better, you know, that would be more efficient, to do kind of this 2-day redesign, very intensive, and then to prototype a new way of doing things over like 90 to 100 days with a very, very aggressive deadline or timeline or goal. And so one example of that would be pledging a goal of, let's say, ending veterans homelessness in La Crosse by Christmas, which is entirely doable based on what I've seen other communities do and what I see of the data in La Crosse. So, and just focusing like a laser, putting a lot of pressure on yourself with a short timeline, which creates urgency that sometimes has dissipated over this issue, and people, you know, and communities become used to having homeless people. And so this level of urgency isn't there that may be there if a tornado had just hit. You know, you would have an urgent response. A lot of the red tape would fall away, and you would just get people back into housing. And so injecting urgency, which also unleashes creativity and innovation, because you have to figure out a solution. And so suddenly you're looking at your resources and finding opportunities that maybe you wouldn't have seen if you weren't under this kind of time pressure. So I think that the best thing La Crosse can do is to do one of those rapid cycle, high stakes goal kind of initiatives and prove to themselves that they can do way more than they think they can in a much shorter time. I know that the expertise is there, and I don't pretend to be the expertise on homelessness in La Crosse. I don't need to be, because you have substantive experts there, but they probably haven't worked in the way. I'm more of an expert in a process and kind of a catalytic process about how to work differently and faster together. And so I think that La Crosse could probably also end chronic homelessness by the end of the year. And so that's my recommendation, is to test out a rapid cycle iteration, high stakes goal, and figure out what you're going to discover about your system in that kind of process. And like I said, when we did that with the many, many communities in the campaign, on average, they doubled their housing placement rate in 100 days. And none of them thought that was possible. And it was just about working differently and cutting through a lot of the sort of red tape and excessive bureaucracy that kind of grows up like weeds in these different processes, especially when you're using federal or state or, you know, public money, and just creating a more efficient system. And so suddenly seeing resources where there weren't any. Like maybe there's, you know, La Crosse has an interesting mix of a sort of artificially tight rental market because of the waves of students that come and go. And that puts a pressure on the rental market. But there's also a lot of kind of vacant or semi-vacant or underutilized housing as well in the core of downtown La Crosse. So I know that there's the expertise in La Crosse to figure out how to connect those dots between people who need housing and housing that's available and a way to maybe subsidize, let's say, their rent for X amount of time while they get back on their feet. So I think people in La Crosse can come up with those solutions. What I'm hoping to do is create the sort of innovative space for them to do it.
We've been talking with Aaron Healy, a national expert on preventing and ending homelessness, about what La Crosse can do to help the unsheltered. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto. Our senior news editor and producer is John Davis, and Matt Clark is our student producer. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.